Football is fun. Why shouldn't your football podcast be the same?
Follow and listen to Heed the Call NFL podcast with Dan Hansis and Mark Sessler wherever you get your podcasts.
It's time now to go beyond the headlines and for the next 2 hours, go where every sports fan wants to go. Behind the scenes and into the practice facilities, locker rooms, coaches' offices, and press boxes to get the info before anyone else. This is the ESPN 1320 Insiders.
I learned something about myself yesterday. James Ham's over there. I'm Kyle. Joe Brazil on the ones and twos. We're the Insiders. We're sponsored by Jiffy Lube, and we are hanging out with you until noon right here on ESPN 1320. That is Sacramento's sports leader. I learned something about myself yesterday.
Uh-oh.
Yeah. First of all, no, I don't want to get sidetracked. I thought I didn't care about the home run derby. It turns out there's part of me that can still get furious at the home run derby.
Okay.
Welcome to being an athlete in Sacramento, Brent Rooker.
Dude, oh my gosh.
Because this is life for you now. This is how this is going to go. You're going to lose a tiebreak in the home run derby by an estimated 8/100ths of an inch. 8/100ths of an inch based on estimations.
From something that is not even as accurate as like a police car radar.
Brent Rooker said it. After the home run derby, I didn't know that StatCast could do down to the 100th of an inch. It would be helpful if they put that on the board so we all knew what was going on. Instead, you have this event, okay? Whether you like the home run derby or not, there are drama-filled moments. Matt Olson needing one home run to move on or to get into the tiebreak, being down to one out in his home stadium. Everybody knows he needs to hit a home run on his next swing. That's drama. That's fun. When you've got a guy, you've got Junior Caminero trying to track down O'Neill Cruz. It's like, that's fun. Like, oh man, he's got 20. He's got two outs to work with. And he's two. Oh my God, this is so fun. It's great. O'Neill Cruz hit a ball 513 freaking feet last night.
That was crazy.
Can you, I don't want this to be like, if you haven't played, you don't know. But this is just basic physics. Ball coming in faster, it's going to be easier for ball to go out faster, right? Mm-hmm. Because the ball coming in, the force of the ball coming in is going to create force going out when it's hit with the bat. The fact that he hit at 118 miles an hour exit velocity, by the way, a 70 mile an hour BP pitch, hit at 513 feet is insane. Just totally nuts. Salute to O'Neill Cruz. He was my pick. He didn't win. Anyways.
Well, he did. He won $1 million. No, he won $100,000 for having the longest.
For this home run. So he walked away with $250,000 because you get $150,000 for participating.
I don't feel bad for him.
No, he's doing okay. So I think the runner-up got $500,000. But anyways, that you have this event that is dedicated to hitting the ball as far as humanly possible. Like, what are the limits of the best hitters in the world hitting home runs? It's endurance, it's strength, it's pitch selection. There's so much that goes into it. To have Cal Raleigh, who is the story of baseball this year, without question, to have Cal Raleigh hit 17 home runs, the same number that Brent Rooker hit, that you're deciding who moves on to the semifinals because it goes from a field of eight down to four. They had the first three, and then Rooker and Raleigh were tied. How are you not, in that scenario, going to a three-pitch swing-off? That is the tiebreak in the semifinals.
Mm-hmm.
If you're tied in the semifinals, you go to a three-pitch swing-off. How is that not a tie? How are you not taking that drama of, hey, one of these dudes is going to, because $1 million on the table, one of these dudes is going to be out. One of these dudes is going to be $150,000. He's a participation trophy. One of these dudes is going to move on, and they have three swings to prove it. No, you're not going to do that. You're going to go down to an estimated 8/100ths of an inch?
470.61 to 470.53.
Off of estimations on launch angle and exit velocity, how do you know that maybe the seams were raised a little higher on the ball that Cal Raleigh hit, and maybe it would have gone 0.02 inches less than Brent Rooker's. You don't know. You're guessing. You're putting $1 million on the line. You're trying to make this a very serious event. You want this to be a thing that people tune into. This is why. You could have a swing-off. You could have, the conversation would be, look at this swing-off. Oh my God, why are there extra innings? Why don't we do swing-offs for wins instead of extra innings? Like, that would be the conversation. And instead, the conversation is, Brent Rooker, weight room kid. 0.08 of an inch. That's what you're out by. See ya. Sorry for your... Secondly, Brent Rooker only got 38 pitches. You're supposed to get 40. They only rack up exactly 40 baseballs.
Okay.
And so he only got 38 pitches because they let you, you know, take a couple and kind of see. So he had time left and only got 38 balls. Why are you putting the exact amount in the basket? Why are you not filling the basket and having somebody count? Okay, that's one. That's two. That's easy. And you avoid this scenario where all of a sudden you have a batter who didn't move on because of a tie break that went down to 0.08 of an inch. He had two opportunities there to either hit one over the fence. Well, just hit one over the fence. I was going to say, or hit one further. But hit one over the fence, and he's moving on. And now Cal Raleigh, who won the event, salute. It's awesome. First catcher to ever win the Home Run Derby, just continues this magical first half into the Home Run Derby and hopefully into the All-Star Game and beyond.
Mm-hmm.
Phenomenal story. We love to see it.
The Big Dumper.
The Big Dumper. Shout out. But the fact that Brent Rooker gets hosed because of a 0.08 of an inch StatCast projection.
Projection.
A guess of, meh. That's the whole point, is let him hit.
That's so wild. So wild.
It's really frustrating, and it was still a fun event. I still had a great time watching. But as somebody here who would love to see a Sacramento A perform really well in All-Star weekend, or during the All-Star festivities, I guess it's a Monday, it's not a weekend, but who would love to see a Sacramento A do well, to have him get screwed like that in the first round where he gets two pitches short. Oh, that sucked, man. That screams to me. And here's why I think it irks me to my core. That smacks of MLB looked at Brent Rooker and they looked at Cal Raleigh and said, hey, Cal Raleigh needs to be the one who moves on.
Mm-hmm.
What can we do with the estimations? Oh, let's just do like 0.61 and 0.54 or 5.3 or whatever the measurements are. Okay, yeah, just say that and then Cal Raleigh will move on and nobody will care. It's StatCast. That's what that reeks of to me. You had Brent Rooker, who's on the A's, who, whether they're in Oakland or Sacramento or whatever, are just kind of over here.
Mm-hmm.
They're the money ball team. Yeah, they're over here. And you have the story of baseball, Cal Raleigh. There were no circumstances where MLB was going to put themselves in a position where Brent Rooker moved on and Cal Raleigh didn't.
Yeah.
And that sucks to me.
Yeah, it sucks. I mean, it's just an exhibition, and I get it. We're like making a mountain out of a molehill here. But at the end of the day,
I care very much.
I kind of want to see what Rooker could have done, if he would have got to keep going. Either way, like the entire premise of it was very odd. Like, you had guys up there that were just exhausted, like, swinging out of their shoes for, 2.5 minutes straight?
Yeah, you get a timeout in there, and then you get your bonus round.
Yeah.
But yeah.
Yeah, but it just felt like they were exhausted. Like, it wasn't a who can hit the ball, you know, the most consistent or anything else. Mm-hmm. It's like, who can reload and somehow get a hold of a ball really quickly?
Yeah.
And then you have the human error aspect of it, of, you know, pitches that are inside or outside and all that. Yeah, it's just like, it was a very, very odd, mm-hmm. like, sped up thing, mm-hmm. but then sped up, and then it kept going.
Yeah.
And it was like, okay, like, I like the Home Run Derby, but, you know, I don't need Chris Berman going back, like, 800 times like it used to be for two decades.
Sure.
Maybe three. But still, I found it entertaining until it was like, okay, this kind of feels weird.
Yeah, I think overall the format is fine, but you're right. There has to be a different way because you have such an advantage if you go last. If you go first, you're like, I got to hit 1 million home runs. I have no idea what the number is going to be.
Yep.
So you're swinging for the fence. If you go up last and you know, okay, 18, you can gauge your stamina a little bit. And I think Brent Rooker had a great shot because he was not hitting every ball 450 plus feet. He's getting them just over the left field wall, just easy power, just using a pretty normal swing.
Like he's at Sutter Health Park.
Just like he's at Sutter Health Park.
Just barely clear
at the ship, the SHP. So yeah, man. I like I said, I went into last night going, all right, I'll watch this for a little bit, and then when I was going to watch for Rooker specifically, and then when he was kind of in it, you want to watch to the end, see how the first round shakes out, and when that shook out the way it did, it was really, really difficult to enjoy it the rest of the way.
Yeah,
because it just it. Yeah,
we're like, just going to rob a guy by 0.08 of an inch.
You cannot do that. If we talked about it yesterday, I think MLB did a really smart thing, which I don't say often. That might be the first time I've ever said that. I think MLB did a really smart thing putting money on the table.
Mm. Yeah, yeah.
It didn't incentivize everybody to all the best power hitters to participate in the event.
Yeah.
Jazz Chisholm came in and hit 3 home runs.
Well, clearly.
Really tough look for our guy, Jazz.
Gatorade put the money up, clearly.
Oh, yeah, every year.
Yeah.
First thing out there, Gatorade towel.
Yeah.
Yeah, first time. Every
guys,
time.
Like, I don't want the Gatorade. Like, you're taking the Gatorade.
Take the Gatorade. There's another one.
I'm an 11-year-old. Take the Gatorade or I'm getting fired.
Did you see the kid rob a home run? What are you doing?
Oh.
Oh, come yeah. on, man. You got to go for the ball.
No, 1,000% you don't. There's they money on
it.
The lane.
They counted it.
Yeah, they did. They for yeah. sure did. But you cannot... You can't do that. Let it hit the ground.
I saw
it. Zach Let Coles, it hit the ground?
Well, get out of the way. If you,
Fair
if you're,
enough.
If you're,
it's not
on
about
the, you. If you're on the warning track, you're letting that, like, salute
that's,
to the dude.
That's
great
fair
catch.
Enough.
Phenomenal catch. I'm not trying to take anything away there. But it's a home run derby. Let's say it was close, and they went, all right. And that guy loses $1 million because of what? Ooh, that's so dicey. That's so dicey.
Though, it's hilarious that a home run got robbed at the home run derby. Yeah. Like, that's awesome.
Yeah.
I saw a kid go up and barehand a ball. Like, what in the
that's
world?
That's so gangster.
I saw a couple of good plays, actually. I saw one lady in center field read a ball that was hit
to
the wall.
Yeah, you can tell the people running around out there play.
She's just...
Yeah. Softball, baseball,
I'm like,
whatever.
Dude, that was like a 400-foot ball in the air, and you just caught it.
Yeah, easy work.
Yeah.
It was incredible. They need to do a version of the broadcast. I know they had the normal broadcast, and then they had the Pat McAfee one, which I want no parts of. Salute to Pat McAfee. Okay. He has created a program, to use their parlance, that everybody loves, or so many people love, very clearly. It's not for me. The content is not for me, and that's fine. Not everything's for everybody. But they have that alternate broadcast. They need an alternate broadcast where it's just the stadium noise. I just want crack of the bat and cheers. Because so much of what throws me off about the event is it's split screen, and then it's one screen, and then it's split screen, then it's bad camera work, and then they got to cut to another ball. It's like, y'all, there's too much. And then you've got Carl Ravitch or whoever he's talking, and then they're interviewing someone, and then they're talking about something. And meanwhile, somebody's hit 4 home runs in a row, the crowd's going crazy, and we're hearing some boring-ass story about when so-and-so was a reliever in Tuscaloosa. Like, all right, get to the home runs, man. So I think there needs to be an alternate broadcast where it's just the split screen and I don't want sound. I don't need audio. I just give me crack of the bat and crowd noise.
Well, I also thought the way that it was so fast, the balls were still flying out of the park while another ball is flying out of the park.
Which is not supposed to be allowed.
Yeah, that was bizarre.
Yeah, it's supposed to be that ball has to land first before you can pitch it. We're clearly not following that. That could have been dangerous, though. Did you see some of those line drives that were going out to left field?
Oh, yeah.
I thought O'Neill Cruz was going to kill somebody.
Yeah.
He's hitting these 120-mile-an-hour line drives that are skimming the top of the wall, people diving out of the way. I'm not getting in front of that. I played a lot of baseball. I'm not standing in front of that.
Not barehanded.
Hell no.
Maybe with the big glove that they gave out.
Dude, did you see that thing, the Mizuno glove in the outfield?
They gave those away. Those were
like a 10-gallon glove.
Yeah, that was a giveaway outside. They were like, that's the Geico glove. That's what it was. It was like a gigantic glove. Again, great marketing. Great marketing by baseball and by Geico.
Yep.
I mean, I thought it was spectacular because I saw they panned to the outside and people coming in.
Yeah.
And they had them like folded up under their arm. Like a suitcase.
Joe, you need to get one of those and just trot out to whatever position you play in softball.
Okay.
Yeah, just go out there.
Go full Brett Butler.
Yeah, just
that's actually a really good
idea. Get the
big
hat to match it.
I wanted to do like a top hat.
Oh, that'd be great.
I think that'd be fun.
I love that idea.
Yeah.
Get the big baseball cap, though.
I think they're called big hats or really big hats. Yeah. Or whatever they're called. You know what I'm talking about?
But that would make too much sense. If I went out there with just like a top hat on, it'd be like,
You're looking for maximum zag.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
You don't want to fit in it at all.
No.
All right. That's fair. I love a top hat idea.
The tournament guys that go out and they're wearing all white. And you're like, come on, bro.
All right, guy.
Like, you're not going to die for a ball.
All right.
You're not getting that outfit dirty. You know it.
Sources in the chat are saying Joe, a lockdown left fielder. That doesn't surprise me.
Oh, that checks out.
All right. The Kings also played a summer league game last night. They won again. They're 3-0 in the summer league. Summer league championship is nigh. Where are we playing in the parade? Where are we celebrating? I will dive into all that. But no, I have a question about Devin Carter, because Devin Carter has played much better over the last two games and I think probably played his best game last night. I think he might take someone's minutes.
Oh.
And we'll talk about that. That's James Hamm. I'm Kyle Madsen. He's Joe Brazil. We're the Insider, sponsored by Jiffy Lube here on ESPN 1320. That is Sacramento Sports Leader.
You're listening to The Insiders with James Hamm and Kyle Madsen, sponsored by Jiffy Lube on ESPN 1320 and 98.5 HD2, Sacramento Sports Leader.
Hi, I'm PJ Vogt, and I want to tell you about my podcast, Search Engine. We try to make sense of the world, one question at a time. No question too big, no question too small. We will even answer your questions if you send them in. Stuff like, what happens when a cemetery goes out of business? What should we do about teens using AI to do their homework? Who buys luggage at the airport luggage store? Follow and listen to Search Engine in partnership with Odyssey wherever you get your podcasts.
Now, back to the Insiders with James Hamm and Kyle Madsen, brought to you by Jiffy Lube on ESPN 1320.
Yeah, that's us. Joe Brazil is also here. We're hanging out with you until noon. If you got any home run derby takes, let us know. Elk Grove Kia Talk Line, 916-909-1320. 916-909-1320. I had no idea I cared about that event so much, and then Brent Rooker got hosed, and I found out I cared a lot.
I have one take.
I was so mad last night.
I have one take. Let the kids make a play.
Yeah, make a...
Let the kids make a play.
Should that be the move? If you can... If your home run does not clear the fence enough. We'll talk about Kings Summer League here in a second. If your home run is that close that it can get robbed, it doesn't count.
I saw a tweet very similar that said, if a kid can rob your home run, it's probably not a home run in the home run derby.
Man.
All right.
That one was definitely a home run, though. That was way over.
Count it as a home run, but let the kids make plays.
All right.
Yeah.
I'm open to it. I hate the take right now, but I'm open to it. All right. Meanwhile, Kings had a summer league game against the Suns last night. They won going away, 94-76. It was not super competitive, at least from a close game standpoint.
Yeah.
The Kings were competitive. The Suns were not. The Suns were not particularly good.
No, I thought, like, to open the game, first of all, the Suns came out, and they are huge. Like, they fielded a gigantic team.
Yeah.
And they punched the Kings in the face, like, right away. You could see the Kings, like, I think it was 6-0 or something, 7-0. Mm-hmm. The Kings just looked off-kilter, like, oh, my gosh, this team is huge. And they kept getting missing shots and then getting putbacks. Mm-hmm. That's how Phoenix kept scoring buckets. And then you saw the Kings, like, okay, we're all right.
Yeah.
Let's move the ball faster,
mm-hmm.
and then let's punch these dudes back.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden, in the second quarter, they just wailed on them.
Yeah, it was 23-21, something in that range, and then all of a sudden it was like 37-23. Like, what happened?
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
And then Devin Carter hits the running shot to end the half.
Yeah.
Which was just absolutely spectacular.
Insane. Especially after starting so slow.
And he let it bounce up to his hand and then shot it. It was just absolutely spectacular. He was great. I thought Neek was great early. Like, a really fun game.
Yeah, a really encouraging game, too. I think if you're the Kings, and Devin Carter has been the focus here of Summer League. Since the Kings started practice, and Devin Carter's going to play point guard. That's been the big focus.
Yep.
Through three games, I don't think I have not been convinced that Devin Carter is going to play point guard in the NBA.
Mm.
And again, this is through three summer league games. And it's not that I think he's been bad. It's that I don't think that's going to be his game. What I wonder last night, after watching Devin Carter last night and the previous game where we talked about it yesterday, this is not a player whose instinct is bring the ball across the floor, get the team into the offense, move the ball, and keep it moving. This is a player who's going to put the ball on the deck. He's going to score. If he's got an open shot at three, he's going to take it. I watched Devin Carter last night and just watched kind of the overall game he played. And the stats were good. 17-3-2 was efficient, really efficient after starting, I think, 0-4 from the floor. I kind of wonder if, given that we know the Kings have tried to trade Malik Monk a couple of times this offseason, I kind of wonder if Devin Carter playing over Malik Monk or eating into Malik Monk's minutes is a thing that's going to happen this year. Because, let me explain real quick.
Okay.
I don't think Devin Carter is better than Malik Monk. I need that to be very clear. I need that to be abundantly clear. Malik Monk is a better player. But by a lot. I wonder if Devin Carter is more the type of player the Kings are looking for in that backup two guard role.
Hmm.
Where he's going to be pesky defensively, pesky to good defensively. He's going to grab rebounds. He's going to grab rebounds and move the ball up the floor and lead the break. He'll take a three when it comes to him. But he's going to look to maybe create for himself a little more offensively than they would like from a point guard. But if he's going to do the little things like play good defense, grab rebounds, and just kind of be that pain in the ass type of player. I watched him last night, and that's the first thing that comes to my mind is, man, is he more going to be in the Doug Christie, Scott Perry mold than a Malik Monk, to the point that when I wonder, hey, who are the veterans that are going to have to lose minutes to some of the young guys? Maybe it's Malik.
Okay, so first of all, I understand what you're saying, but I'm going to say because of the financial, like, the financials of this deal, I don't think there's any way. Because Malik Monk, you owe a ton of money to, and yes, that you're not going to devalue Malik Monk to play Devin Carter.
Okay.
I'd also say this. Malik Monk, I think people forget just how good of a passer he is. He's one of the best pick and roll passers in the game. And actually the stats back it up. Like he efficiency wise in the pick and roll, I think he is the best pick and roll point guard in the league when it comes to, you know, dishing out assists to his guys, right?
Mm-hmm.
So he can play a point guard position even if it's coming off the bench. He can be the primary. You just don't want him as a primary as a starter, you know, because mm-hmm. I think it's just a different role. So I think that there's always going to be a lot more value in Malik Monk. But I think Devin Carter has played himself into a conversation about how you get a fifth guard on the court,
mm-hmm.
and whether or not he's going to be able to find that. And, mm-hmm. and I'm not sure if he is still, I mean, I was way more impressed with his 17 points or whatever it was last night than I was with his 30 a couple of nights earlier.
Why?
Because it felt like he was part of a team, not just one dude out there randomly scoring 30 points.
Sure.
I really felt like the 30 points were like, okay, look, man, that's not going to fly. You know, did he hit one from the logo or close to it last night? Sure. But overall, I thought a lot more of the play on the court. He was part of a group of five players on the court, mm-hmm. not just an individual freelancing a la Cam Thomas, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so that's it, like, totally stood out to me that he willingly passed the ball. He got into the key, and as opposed to forcing a bad off-balance shot, he looked to move the ball to a teammate. And I think that that's something that just stood out. And I also think, like, you know, having Mark Jones on the broadcast, Mark Jones always gives you like these little nuggets of information.
Mm-hmm.
And when he started talking about how Devin called his dad in early May and said, hey, I need help. I need to learn how to play the point guard position,
mm-hmm.
because of what we've talked about yesterday. Like, he's in a battle, like, because if he can't prove that he can at least handle the backup to the backup point guard a little bit, the third string point guard, then they're going to have to bring in a third string point guard, and he's not going to play at all.
Mm-hmm.
And so I thought that hearing that
it's endearing, number one, that mm-hmm. he called his dad, who is still a NBA assistant mm-hmm. coach,
Memphis? And said,
I need help. He was in Memphis. I'm not sure if he still is. But that's, I think, as of last year, he was in Memphis. But even hearing Mark on the broadcast, it sounded like he said he was with Memphis. But having his dad work with him, a former NBA point guard, is a good thing. Like reading the angles and understanding how to help your teammates. I think that Devin probably, game one, started hoisting a bunch of shots and started missing a bunch of shots.
Yep.
Game two, he needed to prove that he could score. Game three is more representative of who he can be as a player in the NBA.
Yeah.
Because, look, he's not going to get an opportunity outside of like maybe once or twice a year to score 30.
Yep.
And that's just because he got so red hot that someone kept feeding him and was like, all right, well, go ahead and go, kid.
Yeah, he went 6 of 8 from three.
Yeah. That, like the mystical, holy cow, I can't believe that just happened. We're shorthanded and he stepped up game, right? Yeah. Well, that's not who he's going to be allowed to be at the NBA level. So I just thought overall it was a much more competent game.
Yeah.
Where he looked like he was part of something, not just like lone dude out there doing whatever he wants.
You saw the translatable skills to playing alongside Domantas Sabonis, Zach LaVine, DeMar DeRozan, Keegan Murray. You saw things that could, oh, okay, I see how he could fit into a smaller role.
Of course. And the smaller role is like you're the ninth option.
Right.
Like that's tough, but like I hate to be like rude, kid, but you're the ninth option.
Yeah, and that's not, and I, that's not hating. That is the reality of where the Kings roster is.
Of course.
But I think there's so much value in the things Devin Carter does that isn't putting the ball, that aren't putting the ball in the basketball hoop.
Mm-hmm.
He does so many other little things well. Like you and I sat there and talked about it last year and talked about it at games. His ability to rebound is massive.
Yeah.
He is so good at that. And the Kings don't have a ton of dudes that run around grabbing rebounds. It's Domantas Sabonis, sometimes Keegan.
Yeah.
Like having a guard who's going to pull down 5-6 boards a game, that's a big deal.
Mm-hmm.
Can he be pesky defensively and switchable 1-2 and with his length, some threes?
Yeah. Like,
can you do those things? And I think he can. And I think what we're seeing as the summer league progresses here, yeah, we're seeing, because I was really hard on him after his debut.
Mm-hmm.
I thought he was a disaster. I was not super impressed by the 30 points. Because again, it was better, to be sure. It was much better than game one. But it was still like, dog, we know you can score against this competition. We know you can do that.
Yep.
Can you be effective in other ways? And I thought last night was a prime example of him being effective in some other ways. Still scored well. Did a nice job there. But when he hits the floor, it is very rarely, like you said, going to be, Devin, we need you to go shoot it tonight. And take open shots. If you can get to the rack, great. But it's going to be Sabonis. It's going to be LaVine. It's going to be Monk. It's going to be Keegan.
Yeah.
It's going to be DeRozan. So that's where last night, that's what I wanted to see from Devin Carter, was an effective game where he didn't have to shoot it 20 times to be effective.
Yeah, I totally agree. And like, look, at the end of the day, we don't know what's going to happen with Devin Carter, mm-hmm. whether he's going to make it in the league or he's not.
Mm-hmm.
But these are the strides he has to take, because you say it all the time, the line from Austin Rivers, like, know your role.
Change your life.
Change your life, right?
Mm-hmm.
He is still at that stage where he does not know his role at all and is unwilling to accept any other role other than trying to be a star.
Yep.
It's just not going to fly.
Not on the current roster.
No. Well, and not in most rosters. It's sure. He needs to be a role player, mm-hmm. and he needs to figure that out quick.
Yeah. So I thought last night was some evidence of, oh, look, he can have an effective game.
Yeah.
Without having to shoot it a ton. You mentioned the third point guard position, and you texted me about this yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
And when you texted me about it, I was in the middle of something and I saw your text and I was like, oh, okay. Like, okay, James, you got it. But then I was thinking about it. And when I went to reply, I was like, man.
Maybe?
I don't think I hate it. Because again, I'm always open to being wrong. I'm always open to admitting when I'm wrong.
Mm-hmm.
I wondered after I watched Mason Jones play 32 minutes in the summer league opener, like, why in the world are we giving Mason Jones 32 minutes going into his sixth year in the league? Seventh year in the league? Sixth year in the league.
I think it's fifth or sixth?
Going into, it's at least going into his sixth. Why are we giving this guy 32 freaking minutes in summer league?
Yeah.
But then you kind of watch him play, and you watch him be the proverbial adult in the room.
He's so unselfish.
Yes.
Yeah.
And watching him do that in this environment, you talk about knowing your role, learning your role.
Mm-hmm.
I don't hate the idea if he continues playing well in the summer, plays well in camp and through the preseason, of Mason Jones sticking around as a third point guard, which is what you presented to me. I don't hate your idea as much as I hated it when you first texted it to me.
Yeah, well, I'm watching him play, and like, look, he's setting up his teammates all over the court. Like, yeah. His court vision is great.
Mm-hmm.
Then you go to his G League stats, and we always, like, you know, of course his G League and all that stuff. He averaged 7.4 assists per game last year, and he averaged 8.4 assists per game the year before.
Mm-hmm.
In major minutes, you know, major opportunities. Not only that, but the dude shot, like last year, he shot 41.3 from three and 47.6 and 40.3 and 40.3. Mm-hmm. Like, this dude can flat out shoot the ball.
Mm-hmm.
But he's realized in order to make it in the NBA, he's got to play defense.
Yep.
He's got to be physical.
Yep.
And he has got to find another way to help his teammates. And for him, it's been to become a better passer and a better distributor.
Mm-hmm.
And like, look, if you're going to create a system, a true system, where you're bringing guys from, you know, and you're working on them, trying to create NBA players at the G League level that can actually help a roster, then you do need to continuously support that by promoting your own players. And I think they've done a good job of, like, the Isaac Jones thing, the Keon Ellis thing, where they're finding diamonds in the rough and sort of, you know, putting them through a good polish and seeing how they come out the other side. And for me, like, Mason Jones has done everything the Kings have asked him to do and probably a lot more.
Sure.
I mean, the whole story about him losing 45 pounds and all that,
mm-hmm.
That's crazy. But at the same time, like, look, I get why he's at Summer League. He's there to help support a bunch of young guys, to teach him the way, to show them, like, if you want to play in the league, it's not to be the next, you know, the next Domas or the next DeMar DeRozan or Zach LaVine. It's to be the next Keon Ellis.
Yeah.
You know, find your way, your path, your, you know, unique skill that gets you there.
Yep.
But it cannot be thinking that you're going to be a star. It's got to be, a star in your role.
Find out what's going to get you on the court and become really good at that thing.
Yep.
The way Mason Jones is playing, because you mentioned his shooting numbers. Mason Jones could go out in summer league right now and average 30 a night.
Yes, he could.
Very easily.
Mm-hmm.
But he's playing like a player who Doug Christie and Scott Perry sat down with him and said, hey, you're here in summer league. Your path to making this team is by showing us that you can play point guard in a pinch. That if we're down Dennis Schroeder and Malik Monk, or maybe Dennis Schroeder and Russell Westbrook, that you can come in and give us credible minutes.
Yep.
That you can come in garbage time and give us credible minutes. That if there's injuries, you can come in and we can feel good about playing you 15, 18 minutes a night for a couple weeks.
Yep.
That is how he's playing. And I you need to see it in preseason. You need to see it through training camp. There's other boxes you need to check here. But in terms of checking the summer league box on a path to a roster spot, man, if this is what they've asked him to do and all signs point to that kind of being the case, and if they didn't, I feel even better about it. If he's just taking the onus on himself to kind of be this organizer, I bristled at the idea of Mason Jones as reserve point guard, third point guard, 15th guy on the roster.
Mm-hmm.
But man, then you watch him play, and it's like, oh well,
okay.
I don't hate it.
Yeah, I don't hate it either.
There's worse ideas. Like, would you rather? I mean, seriously, would you rather that or Markelle Fultz? I'd rather stick with Mason Jones.
Well, yeah, that, and I'm looking at in the chat. Paul Charles says he's trying to get a job in the NBA. Kyle, it's not a Kings organization. He's been in the Kings organization for a few years. I would hope the Kings want him to get a job somewhere, even if it's not in Sacramento. Okay, so here's the flaw to that statement from Paul. Mm-hmm. If he was trying to get an NBA job, then he's going out there scoring 25 every game and trying to show that he's legit.
Mm-hmm.
if he's trying to win games and trying to make his team a you know, even if it's a summer league champion, that's okay. You know, and we should note he did get hurt last night. He pulled up lame late in the game. I don't know if you saw that, but it looked like he tweaked his back, his low back. That's usually not a good thing, especially with them having a game on Wednesday.
Yeah.
But, you know, the Kings are 3-0. Their point differential is second best and out of everybody. The Spurs are the only one with a better point differential. And so they've put themselves in a really good position for this weekend.
Yeah. Fingers crossed. Would love to see another another Kings Summer League title. Would they win one in 21?
I think 2019. That's what somebody said.
Pre-pandemic?
Maybe I'm wrong.
Pre-pandemic? It was Davion Mitchell's rookie year, right?
Oh, that's way later.
Yeah, that's what I thought.
Yeah,
because he was a rookie in 22.
Yeah, 21, 22. Yeah.
Huh. All right, we've got a ton more King stuff to get into. We've got several players we got to go over. You mentioned a couple things there, Nate Clifford specifically, that I want to get into. But hey, I want to put a pin in the Kings briefly. 49ers rookies report to minicamp today, training camp. We're here. We're gonna solve the Juwan Jennings situation. We talked about this yesterday. I have a solution. I'm going to tell you what it is next. That's James Hamm. I'm Kyle Madsen, and that's Joe Brazil. We're the Insider, sponsored by Jiffy Lube, right here on ESPN 1320 at Sacramento Sports Center.
You're listening to The Insiders with James Hamm and Kyle Madsen, sponsored by Jiffy Lube on ESPN 1320 and 98.5 HD2, Sacramento Sports Leader.
Life can feel overwhelming, but you don't have to go through it alone. On my podcast, From the Heart with Rachel Braithen, I share openly and vulnerably about everything life brings us and what we can learn by living with our hearts a little bit more open. Every Friday, a new episode brings you a new story with topics on self-care, motherhood, healing, and more. You are enough, just the way you are. This podcast is a reminder of that. Follow and listen to From the Heart with Rachel Braithen wherever you get your podcasts.
Now, back to the Insiders with James Hamm and Kyle Madsen, brought to you by Jiffy Lube on ESPN 1320.
James Hamm's over there, Joe Brazil is over there, I'm Kyle Madsen, and we are hanging out with you until noon. We have plenty of more King stuff, but I have some NFL things to go over. One, the Tampa Bay Buccaneers announced a new throwback uniform today. They're their 1976 throwbacks, the creamsicle joints. So they brought back the orange jersey.
Yep.
Last year, 2 years ago. But this year, they're going with the all-white throwback. So white pants, white jersey with the orange numbers outlined in red with a throwback white helmet.
With the old Buccaneers logo.
Yes. Mm. Football uniforms peaked in like 1981. And we just need to have every team who was around then go back to it.
Yeah.
Every team needs a permanent move for the Tampa Bay Buccaneers back to the creamsicles is a W. The 49ers, the best thing they ever did uniform-wise was get away from those magenta, dark red, burgundy things, whatever the hell they were, back to the cherry red with the gold helmet, with the gray face mask. Like, that was the right thing. Every team needs to do this, because every time a team drops a throwback uniform, Eagles, Broncos, the Raiders AFL uniforms, the white ones with the silver numbers outlined in black, fire. Every team needs to go back to that. Every single one.
Okay.
Just rewind the clock.
These are awesome. They're the James Wilder ears.
Very good pull.
Yeah, you know, the Doug Williams, you know, Doug Williams. While he was there. And what was it? God, what's his? They had Steve Young. They had an incredible middle linebacker, Solomon.
Sure, I'll believe you.
I think he's a. Yeah, I actually think he's Leroy. Oh, Leroy Selman. There we go.
Hell yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Bring back, dude. They announced that today. I'm so in on the Bucks. You can only wear those X amount of times in a year. I forget what the exact number. It might be four that you can wear an alternate uniform all year.
Okay.
But the Bucks need to figure out a way to wear those permanently.
Yep.
Extremely fire. A small bit of 49ers news. Rookies reporting to minicamp today. They have not signed second-round pick Alfred Collins yet. He's their only rookie who remains unsigned. It's going to be interesting because in the NFL, 30 of the 32 second-round picks remain unsigned. But that's because the Texans and the Browns, who picked 33rd and 34th, fully guaranteed their contracts for their second-round players, which in turn made every other second-round pick go, hey, I want to do that. Because the way it works is your guarantees, the percentage of your guarantee goes down the further you go down in the second round.
Yeah.
So by fully guaranteeing the first two picks, well, now the third pick is like, I want that.
I don't want to be the first one to take less money.
Right. So yeah. That's what there's this kind of weird standoff in the second round. And according to Diana Rossini from The Athletic, everybody's kind of waiting on Tyler Shuck, who's the 40th overall pick. He's a quarterback with the Saints, mm-hmm. who need a quarterback and may start him this year. I think everybody's kind of waiting on that domino. And once he works out a deal, everybody else is going to kind of work out a deal. So sounds like there will be no Alfred Collins for the 49ers, their second-round defensive tackle. Normally, that wouldn't be a huge deal, except for the fact that the 49ers are super banking on all of their rookies to play and play a lot on the defensive line. So that's a situation worth monitoring. I know that a lot of the times a rookie contract being signed is a pretty formal thing, but that's something to watch out for.
Yeah, it's totally weird. I mean, you figure if all of the second-round picks get guaranteed money, then what's going to happen next year? Mm-hmm. Like, all the third-round picks are going to want it.
Mm-hmm.
And then all of a sudden, the owners have lost, and everyone's getting fully guaranteed, partially guaranteed. Yeah.
This collusion thing coming out from the arbitration between the league and the Players Association, I think is going to change the conversation a lot around guaranteed money. And if you're a second-round pick right now, and you see the landscape, you see that, you know what, hey, this the fact that the NFL colludes to keep guarantees down in contracts is coming to light. Before I sign this four-year deal where I'm going to take a small amount of guaranteed money, I'm going to try and get all the guaranteed money first.
Mm-hmm.
Because you don't want to be the second-round pick that goes, hey, screw it, I'll just sign with whatever the normal guarantee is, and I'll just go play. And then everyone else winds up getting full guarantees, and you're the one guy left holding the bag.
Yeah.
So that's something to watch. The 49ers relying a lot on Alfred Collins, a defensive tackle from Texas. The 49ers rookies report to training camp today. We told you yesterday here on the Insiders, James Hamm, Kyle Madsen, and Joe Brazil, sponsored by Jiffy Lube, that Juwan Jennings wants either a trade or a new contract with the 49ers. He's due to make about $7.5 million this year. And we kicked around, all right, what do you pay him? Do you pay him? Do you not? Do you trade him? Do you this? I don't think it's super cut and dry because he's in a really weird spot where in an ideal world, he's the third receiver. He's been that third, fourth receiver for his entire career. Last year, pushed into a bigger role, thrived in that role. This year, looks like he's going to at least start the year in a similar role. So he wants to be compensated accordingly. I think there's a really easy contract that you can point to if you're the 49ers.
Okay.
Because I think it fits financially. But I also think it fits kind of some of the uncertainty and accounts for some uncertainty. The Baltimore Ravens and Rashad Bateman, who's a former first-round pick, agreed to a three-year $36.75 million contract. So let's call it $37 million just for the sake of talking.
Okay.
Three-year $37 million contract with $20 million guaranteed. They worked on that extension this offseason. That is the specific contract the 49ers should be going to, that Juwan Jennings should be going to, because Bateman, now granted he's played nine fewer games in his career, and that's part of the uncertainty, played 12 games in year one, six in year two, but he's played 33 in the last 2 years. Last year had a career year with 756 yards and nine touchdowns. Juwan Jennings, of course, 975 yards and a career high 77 catches and a career high six touchdowns. But Rashad Bateman also coming off the best year of his career, 1,923 career receiving yards, right in line with where Juwan Jennings is.
Mm-hmm.
138 catches. I think Juwan Jennings is at 155. They're both at 13 touchdowns. The statistical comp is there. And the comp is also there because the 49ers don't know exactly what Juwan Jennings is going to be in their offense, which is why this is a struggle for them to go, all right, we'll pay him, or all right, we'll trade him. He's too important to trade, but he may not be important enough to pay $18, $19, $20 million a year. Really difficult spot.
Yep.
You threw out 15 yesterday. Can you get to 15? I think that's right in this range.
Double his salary.
Double his salary.
Yeah.
You may not have to go that high, but you can comfortably land in that $12, $13, $14 million a year range. $20 million guaranteed, so you're basically 2 years, $20 million, and then you can get out from under it or extend him again in that third year. The statistical comp is there. And Rashad Bateman, remember, was a first-round pick back in 2021. He was 27th overall. Baltimore's still kind of waiting every year, especially in the fantasy community. It's Rashad Bateman. Rashad, this is the year. This is going to be the year. And he's not quite gotten there. Now, he's talented. He's valuable.
Like one big game.
Right, and you see it, but it's like, man, what are you in? Are you a number one? We're kind of a run-first offense. I got Mark Andrews. It's like, So there's questions about his role.
Mm-hmm.
But no doubt about his importance to what they're doing. And you go 3 years, $37 million, $20 million guaranteed. I think if the Niners can get Juwan Jennings on that deal, you do that yesterday.
Yeah, I would agree with you. Even if it costs you like the full, like let's just say it's 3 year 39 or 3 year 42, just go up, you know, a million. So either 13 or 14, like just get the deal done because it does seem fair. And
I agree. Not only,
you need him. Like you need him this year. But you also, you're probably going to need him next year. And if he, like, the way that he's developed to me, he's no longer a number three. He's probably a legit number two.
Yeah, number two, overqualified number three.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And so that's what a, probably a solid number two NFL wide receiver costs you.
Mm-hmm.
Just pay the guy. And I know he probably wants to push it up, like, he wants a $20 million a year or whatever. But let's be honest, like, you're not going to get that. They just traded Debo because they didn't want to do that.
Here's it. Chris Godwin makes 22 a year. Devontae Adams, 22 a year. Stephon Diggs, 21.1. Mike Evans, 20 and a half. Like you're not, here's Cortland Sutton, 13.7. Khalil Shakir, 13.2. Darnell Mooney for Atlanta, 13 million. Rashad Bateman, 12 and a quarter. Darius Slayton for the Giants, 12 million. Jerry Judy's at 17 and a half, Cooper Kupp at 15. Like he is in just that, the lower part of that range.
Yeah.
It is very straightforward to me. Now, if he's asking for something crazy, if he wants 20 million, I would say, okay, go find that. You go search the trade market and see who's going to give you 3 years and $60 million.
Yep.
Or 4 and 80. Go ahead. Probably not going to find it. So I think there's a sweet spot. I think the Rashad Bateman deal is perfect. And I know it's not as easy as going, hey, here's this contract. There's going to be negotiation. But the Niners should be able to figure this out without trading the guy who's on track to be their number one wide receiver.
Yep.
And to do so without breaking the bank.
Could you imagine if they do have to trade him? Oh,
it's going to
be, of course, be so bad.
It would be really tough.
It's already going to be tough.
Like there's a path there. We're like, okay, Brandon Ayuk's healthy and Ricky Pearsall's good. But, man, that's two huge question marks.
Yep.
You have no idea what you're getting out of either of those players this year. You know exactly what you're going to get out of Juwan Jennings. It seems like a no-brainer to keep him around. But hopefully the 49ers and Juwan Jennings are listening and work off that Rashad Bateman contract. All right, we got to get back into the 49ers. I see Frank on the line. I see TC on the line. Frank's got a trade idea. You know we love a trade idea. Frank's got one of those. TC wants to talk about Mason Jones. We're going to get back into the Kings Summer League. And we're not going the second hour without talking about Neat Clifford.
Nope.
Because holy smokes. Our guy is hooping.
He is.
We'll get all that in the second hour. That's James Hamm. I'm Kyle Madsen. Joe Brazil's over there. We're the Insiders. Sponsored by Jiffy Lube. This is ESPN 1320 Sacramento Sports. Later.
You're listening to The Insiders with James Hamm and Kyle Madsen. Sponsored by Jiffy Lube on ESPN 1320 and 98.5 HD2. Sacramento Sports Leader.
Your true crime podcast keeps listeners on the edge of their seats. But here's the real mystery. Why isn't it making more money? Odyssey Creator Lab is here to solve that. We host your show for free. No fees, no catch. You focus on the suspense while our sales team brings in advertisers and revenue. Stop leaving money on the table. Apply now at creators.odyssey.com and turn your passion for true crime into real revenue.